So, good afternoon. So my subject is quite different from the previous one. So, as you know, in cotton breeding, we face mostly the task of developing cultivars that will perform well in the field, at the gene, and also in textile processing. But how can we predict processing performance of the raw material? It's probably the most challenging task of all. For practical reason. In a breeding program, you may have thousands of lines, and it's impossible to produce yarn from each of these lines. It would be cost prohibitive. So the only way to predict processing performance is to basically build models based on fiber properties that relate to yarn quality. Unfortunately, today, most of the breeders, they use only HVI as a tool to assess fiber properties. And the question is it sufficient? I'm unfortunately old enough to remember the time before HVI, and we had many tools to measure fiber properties in the labs. And we were doing stellometer, we were doing aerometer, a bunch of different types of machines. And when the HVIs came on the market, suddenly you could have, you know, many, many samples tested in just a few hours. And all the traditional ways of testing cotton basically disappeared. And today, very, very few programs around the world use something else than HVI. So, before we talk about fiber properties in itself, I would like to give you a few numbers on the impact of the relocation of the textile industry on our research objectives. If you look at the evolution of yield from the 50s to today, it's a world average. It seems that, you know, everything is going well. The yield is going up year after year. You have a straight line, excellent correlation. You know, it seems that everything is fine. If you look at the production, you see exactly the same figure. Everything looks fine. You know, we went from about 7 million bales in the 50s, 7 million metric tons in the 50s to above 25. But if you look at the market share, that's a completely different story. Because during that same period of time, the world population increased a lot. And the market share went from about 70% in the 50s to about 30% today. In some countries, it's below 20%. If you look at the market share for the main regions, North America remained with a good market share for cotton, about 45%. That's pretty good. But look at Asia, the Far East. We are on 20%. So what happened when you reach this type of levels? Is that suddenly machine manufacturers lose interest, because cotton is not a dominant fiber anymore. So investing in engineering to develop new machinery to process cotton, it's of no interest. Developing new dyes, developing new finishes, no interest either. So everybody kind of agrees that when we reach the 20% limit, the battle is lost. We'll end up like wool, with 2% of the world market. So, and we are pretty close from that. We have to be extremely, extremely cautious. I think that regaining market share, it's the main thing, the main objective we should have. And I thought that we'll have a few guys that are not cotton, so I put one slide on something that is not related to cotton. Wool and flax market share, you see that it's not too good. Wool in 92, it was 4.5%. Today, it's about 2% of the market share. Flax, it's about 1%. So if you look at the situation in the U.S., in 97, we were exporting 11.3 million bales. Our local textile industry, national textile industry, was using 11.3 million bales, and we are exporting 7.5. This is the situation today. It's completely, drastically different. We export about 75% of our cotton. And obviously, suddenly, we go from a captive market, the textile industry on the East Coast, to a market where we need to compete. We need to compete with African cotton, with Uzbek cotton, with Australian cotton, with Indian cotton, in order to keep our market share. And in order to do that, you don't have many solutions. You need to give a product that fits the market needs. There's no other way. Obviously, you have all the things around it, you know, sanctity of the contract, time to delivery, and all these things. But the main thing is that if you don't have the quality people want to buy, just go somewhere else. Today, you have two main spinning technology in the world for cotton. It's the rotor spun yarn and the ring spun yarn. If you look at the rotor spun yarn pretty close, you see that you have those fibers that wrap around the yarn. It's what keeps everything together. So with this type of spinning technology, you don't need a very long cotton, you know, 1 inch or a little above. You can do a very decent product. Ring spun yarn, it's a different story. Ring spun yarns, the fibers are basically parallel and you twist, and everything holds together just by friction. So how do you increase friction? You can increase friction by having more contact, obviously. So having more contact means having longer fibers, it will increase the contact. Having an excellent fiber length distribution will increase the contact. Having very small fiber diameter will increase the contact. All these things are positive to make ring spun yarn. Our traditional market is the rotor spun yarn. You know, in 97, most of our cotton was transformed in rotor spun yarn. But the world wants ring spun yarn. This may convince you. If you look at the installed spinning capacity from 1984 to 2010, in the US, for the rotor, we had 300,000 rotors. We went to a peak of 1 million in 1994, then it went back down to 300,000. At the same time, China went from 100,000 to 2.2 million. But the very interesting figure is the ring. In the US, we had 14,000 spindles in 1984. We are down to 670,000. At the same time, China went from 22 million to 120 million spindles. Basically, you can use one bale of cotton per spindle. So they have the potential to use 120 million bales. You can use 10 bales of cotton per rotor. So you had 22 million bales to that. So they have a potential to use 140 million bales of textile fibers. Cotton, polyester, or other fibers, but textile fibers. That's a lot. And so the dominant is clearly ring spinning, and ring spinning demand some higher level of quality. If you look at the installed capacity, where people are investing, are buying machines. For the short staple cotton, spindle, Asia Oceania, 86% of the investments in 2010 were there. You know, nearly nothing in Europe, very, very little in North America. Where people invest is in Asia. And obviously, you know, you've all heard of increasing of the salary in China, and you begin to see some relocalization of some textile mills in Vietnam, in Laos, in Bangladesh. This is happening. But nevertheless, it's all in Asia. It's all in ring spinning. Don't forget, our main competitor is polyester. There is no doubt about it. The problem with the salary increase around the world, and for the guys that are working in the textile industry, I can tell you that the salary increase are not much. But they are large enough for people to begin to think, is ring spinning possible long term? And most of the people say, probably not. So, should we go back to open end? No, because with open end, you can't get the type of product you want. You know, you can't get dress shirts that look good with open end yarn. So what is the other technology that is possible? The only one today is Airjet. Airjet has been designed for man-made fibers. It basically is the speed of rotor with the look of ring spinning, the best of both worlds. But it has been designed for man-made fibers. It has not been designed for cotton. And nobody today that I know of is working on high-speed spinning technology specifically for cotton. Nobody. So we will have more than likely to adapt cotton to Airjet. We'll have to modify cotton to fit this technology, because if we don't, we will keep losing market share and we'll just disappear. So what do we need to do that? It will not be an easy task. And I think, and you know, when I do prediction, I'm always wrong. So, but you know, in 10 years from now, I will probably be retired anyway. that in 10 years, Airjet will become an important spinning technology. So we have 10 years to build cotton varieties that can adapt to that technology. 10 years is the time it takes to make a variety. But it will not be an easy task, because Airjet is very sensitive to length distribution. And length distribution is something we don't look at, you know, because we use HVI. With an HVI, you have no clue what the length distribution may be. You need other tools for that, like the APHIS, and I will talk about that in a minute. So today we are breeding on fiber properties that are the main fiber properties for marketing of the crop. For the marketing of the crop today. We don't think about how we will market our crop in 10 years from now. And as breeders or geneticists, it's what we need to think about. Today, it's already the past for a breeder. Today, we are preparing what will be grown by the farmers in 10 years from now. And so it's today that we have to begin to think about changing the way we do business. Because if we keep doing it the way we are doing it, I'm afraid we will keep losing our market shares. So one of the main parameters that is related to length, and especially length distribution, is maturity and fineness. As you know, a cotton fiber, basically at the beginning, it's just a tube with not much inside, and then day after day you add layers of cellulose, and it's what we call maturity. More you have cellulose, more mature is the fiber. Obviously, more you have cellulose, stronger is the fiber. And the strong fibers tend to resist breakage much better than a weak fiber, obviously. So when you gin, when you card, you will break fibers. But how many will you break? If the fiber is immature, you will break a lot. If the fiber is mature, you will break some, but it will be reasonable. And obviously, this amount of breakage will completely change the genetic length distribution. You have a cotton that has a genetic potential X, but it just happened that this cotton is not that mature. You process it, and what you are measuring, it's the length after processing, the length after breakage. And we need to be able to assess how much fibers do we break, and why are we breaking them? Are we breaking them because the cotton is immature? Are we breaking them because the cotton, even if it's mature, is just weak? We have no way to tell today, for the same reason HVI. HVI will break a bundle. No. In the 30s, people began to look at fiber strengths. And they began, you know, by breaking fibers one by one and say, okay, you know, it just takes too much time, so let's break bundles, because after all, a yarn is just a bundle of fibers. So if you break a bundle of fibers, you should have a pretty good estimate of yarn strength. It's logical, and it's true, it works. You can predict yarn strength quite well with a bundle test, HVI. The only problem with that is when you process your cotton at the gin or in a textile mill, you don't deal with bundle of fibers. You deal with individual fibers, especially in textile processing at the card level. What is the strength of one fiber? Nobody knows, because what is the best way to improve a bundle strength? Just to increase the number of fibers in the bundle. So if you have a cotton that is immature, the fibers take less space, because after the ball opens, the fiber collapses. So you can pack many more fibers in that bundle. You have a strong bundle, but you have weak fibers. So therefore, you know, what we need to look at, it's not averages. You know, as I always tell my students, if you have 1 foot in a bucket of ice and 1 foot in boiling water, on average, you are comfortable. And it's exactly what we are doing today by just looking at averages. We need to look at distributions. So if you look at maturity, if you look at the fibers at the beginning of the growth, it will look like that. You know, you can't really tell where fiber begins, where it ends, 15 dpa. A little bit later, you clearly see now that the fibers are individual, but they are stuck together. A little bit later, they are still stuck together at some point, which explains why, you know, you have sometimes some fabrics that have a bunch of white specks on them. And people say, okay, why is that? Because, you know, the fibers are blended so much. Even if you have immature fibers, you shouldn't see them. You do, because they travel together. They are stuck together. A little bit later, and later, and later, and later, and finally the mature fibers. So as you can see here, it's just a few fibers, but you have a pretty wide range of wall thickness. Secondary cell wall development is not at all the same for all these different fibers. And it's just, you know, a few fibers. So imagine when you have a bale that has 50 billion fibers in it. So here's just one example. I took two bales with exactly the same micronail. And then we did cross sections and measured maturity, called theta here, and the perimeter. And I look at the bivariate histogram. And you just forget the axis and all these things, just look at the general shape. They are drastically different. This is commercial bales. This is cotton that you can buy on the market today. Commercial bales with a micronail of 4.3, drastically different. One is very mature and fine, it's exactly what you want, while the other one is not that mature and not that fine, is exactly what you don't want. But both are in the premium range for micronail. So I did that on quite a few bales. I looked at, my people looked at about 5 million cross-sections. It took a while. But at the end, we've been able to produce this chart that basically relate micronail, fiber diameter, maturity ratio, and fineness. And you can see, I'm not too good with this thing. You can see, for example, on this line, everything has a micronail of 4. Everything. So the first black dot at the top has a fiber diameter of 19 micron, which is pretty big, and is really mature a little bit above 0.7, micron 04. The other one at the other end of the spectrum has a very fine fiber, 14 micron, and a maturity ratio of 1. This is what we want. Both have the same micronail. So, I understand that people use micronail in marketing. But why do we use that thing in breeding? Why do I see tons of papers showing, yeah, we have a new QTL for micronail? Who cares? Micronail doesn't mean anything. It's a combination of maturity and fineness. It's a marketing element. What we need is to separate fiber diameter and maturity. This would be extremely useful. But micronail in a breeding program, what does it mean? You know, if you're in marketing, you have a variety DP something, variation in micronail tells you about variation in maturity, because within a variety, you have very little variation in fiber diameter. That's fine, it's logical. But in a breeding program, by definition, you have a wide range of fiber properties. Because if you don't, there's not much you can improve. You need variability. So using the micronail doesn't make much sense, except, you know, to remove the extreme high, extreme low that you don't want. But when you are in the range of interest for marketing, it could be anything. When you will stop me, because I could talk for hours, as you know.
I will stop.
Thank you.
You have 10 minutes.
10 minutes, and I'm still at the introduction. But anyway, fiber maturity is essential to evaluate the fiber propensity to break during mechanical handling, and it should be related directly to length distribution. So another fun game to do is that you take a sample of cotton, you sort the fibers by length in that. You do that manually, obviously. In that example, we separated all the fibers shorter than 0.75 inch and everything above that. And then you break the fibers one by one. And you look at the distribution of force to break in that example. And you see they are clearly different. It's the same cotton, you know, just a few, 2-3 milligrams of fibers. It's pretty clear that the shorter fibers are weaker than the longer fibers. Why? Because they were not born that way, you know, most of them, they are broken fibers. They are immature fibers that did break. You have also some short fibers that are native short, and those in general are relatively mature. But the ones that create issue is the ones that are immature. So now if you look at length, here it's another thing that you need to be extremely patient to do that thing. You take a sample of cotton and you end align all the fibers. Can tell you I will not even try. But one of the ladies in the lab is extremely patient. I don't know if she can do this stuff, but anyway, she did it. And this is all the different lengths you have in a small sample of cotton. You see, you have quite a range. So, go back to the HVI. What do you get with HVI? You get two measurements, upper half mean length and mean length. And I should say that this is not the true upper half mean length and the true mean length. When you go into the software, you realize quickly that the machine manufacturer basically is lying and make us think that what they are measuring, these two parameters, that basically they integrate the length distribution. They don't. They just take a span length that kind of relate to a perf mean length and mean length. So it's just two data points on the fibrogram. That's all. So it's what you have with an HVI. With an AFIS, the AFIS is an advanced fiber information system, and it separates the fibers. Then the fibers travel in an airflow And then let's say this is a fiber, you have a laser beam here, the fiber passes in front of the laser, length of the signal, length of the fiber, if you know the speed. So you have also a speed sensor. So you can measure about 20 fibers per second with that system. But you need to measure a lot of fibers if you want to have a good distribution. You need to measure about 10,000 fibers. So it takes some time. But it's what you can get. You get a full distribution. So now, take three commercial bells. 110 in one each, 0.1 in upper half min length, commercial bells. And then you run them on the ethers. And what do you see? You see that. You see that the blue bell, bell number 2, has an excellent length distribution. It's exactly what you want, you know, a big, very prominent peak of longest fibers. And you see also that bell 1, the red line, is exactly what you do not want. You have no clear peak. You have a very wide length distribution. This will not perform well in spinning. There's no way you can tell that with an HVI. If you take a bunch of these bells, more than 3,000 in this case, look at the relationship between the mean length, the average length of the fibers in the sample, with the ethers and the HVI upper half mean length. I mean, you have a trend, but it's pretty light trend. And when you look at the relationship between maturity and the short fiber content, which is the fibers shorter than half an inch, you see that the relationship is pretty good, you know. And it's obvious, you know, less mature fibers are weaker, weaker fibers break and increase the short fiber content. So I think that with these few slides, and I have many more, I try to convince you that we need to evolve. It is absolutely time to evolve, because if we don't do it, I'm afraid that in a few years, we will be in serious trouble. Thank you.